I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Meredith Bell. Meredith has been an entrepreneur since 1982. She is the president and co-founder of Performance Support Systems, a software company based in Virginia. One of Meredith's strengths is forming long-term relationships based on mutual trust and respect. She's worked with her two business partners for 25 years. Many of her company's resellers and clients have been loyal users of their products for 20 years. Meredith, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here with you.
And I can attest to your ability to form relationships, because we got connected relatively recently, and you were very gracious in spending time talking to me and getting to know me and being helpful as we planned to get to know one another and also to do this podcast.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that feedback. That's just a part of how I like to, you know, interact with people and form relationships.
That's great. So you've been an entrepreneur for a long time.
Yes.
What is it that you're passionate about, and how does that kind of dovetail with what you've been doing as an entrepreneur?
Well, since I was a little kid, I wanted to be a teacher. And I went from being an elementary teacher to really helping people become more effective as human beings, specifically how to communicate and interact with each other in a way that strengthens and builds strong relationships, as well as learning how to dig in to those core inner strengths, you know, like courage and perseverance, and utilize those to be more effective. So that's what I really love to do. I see people in leadership roles or in various positions that are simply not achieving what they would like to. And a lot of times it's simply not being aware of things they could do differently to be more effective.
Yeah, like what?
Well, like how they listen to someone else, how they do or do not give feedback to others. I see people stewing over things that bother them rather than addressing it directly, because they're concerned about, you know, hurting the other person's feelings or how they'll be perceived or making the situation worse. And there are appropriate ways that you can speak to someone else where you don't get the defensive reaction. Communication doesn't shut down. And so just thinking of ways that we can help people build relationships where they, you know, obviously care about each other, but they care about interacting in a way that's positive for both of them.
Interesting. Now, since you've been doing this as an entrepreneur for a long time, have you ever thought about doing something differently? Different than being an entrepreneur?
Oh, no. The last place I worked was in 1982. And it was a school system where I had a position in the central office. And I realized I was just not cut out for bureaucracy or politics. And so I jumped off of that or out of that environment with no business background or business skills, but yet I knew there were things I wanted to do. So I just became very intense about learning how to do that. And I love working, you know, for myself. I just can't imagine ever going back to work with, you know, for someone else. I've had my two business partners, as you've mentioned, for 25 years, but we have a very collaborative relationship. Each of us has very different strengths and skills, and over the years, we've come to appreciate and really value our respective skills. So we have a relationship built on trust and respect, and if I could say so, love. You know, that's not a word that's used that often in the workplace, but we really care deeply about each other and our success. And so that you know, fuels my passion and motivation every day, knowing that I've got people that I that care about me and that we're really focused on the same mission and direction and support each other every day.
That's really great. I know I know that a lot of people struggle with collaborative relationships, particularly in business partnerships.
Yes.
One of my guests on this podcast, Patty Sofer, wrote a book about partnerships and why it's so challenging to create an effective partnership, and the questions that people don't ask themselves and don't ask each other when they are trying to develop a partnership.
That's so true. I think that it's easy if you detect, you know, some positive chemistry and common ground, that it can be easy to jump in. What I did initially with my two partners is we collaborated on some things first before we made any kind of formal commitment to, you know, put our businesses together and form this one company. And I think that really was helpful. We could see, you know, where we were compatible, where we were complementary, and we built this trust really from the get-go. We were both, you know, all three of us really, all open. And I think we had good communication skills. We had realistic expectations. We were able to speak openly up front, I think, about potential areas of difficulty. And of course, that's not to say that over the years we haven't had differences of opinion. We certainly do, as recently as yesterday, you know. But we're able to talk through them because of this basis of trust. And I think the trust factor, it's like in a good marriage. If you don't have the trust there, there's always this sense of uncertainty, not feeling sure that the other person is really, you know, has your best interest at heart. And I think that's critical in a business relationship, that you reach that point that you feel this person, you know, would go to the mat for you, is going to have your back and is going to support you as you work together. And, you know, for different people, that can take different moments in time. But I think just like it really is similar to entering a marriage, you've got to have those difficult conversations up front that would uncover potential problem areas, conflict areas, differences in values that could undermine the long-term business relationship or the, you know, marriage relationship. And I think about shared values, things like fairness. You know, if are we going to do the right thing for the customer if there's a complaint that happens? Or, you know, are we going to take a short-term or a long-term view with, you know, making sales? Because one of the things the three of us have always been aligned with was we take a long-term view. We're not interested in making a quick sale and promising things that we, you know, either doubt that we could deliver or we're pretty confident we couldn't follow through with. So if we want to make sure there's a good match when somebody makes a decision to invest in one of our software products. So, you know, we tell the truth. Integrity and honesty are some of our core values. And I think that's a critical piece of, you know, finding out, is this business partner or potential business partner somebody that I could work with long term?
Yeah, those are really great questions that need to be asked right up front. And you're right. If it's really clear that you have shared values, then you can do a lot together. But if you don't have shared values, then you're going to run into problems.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered if we could transition and talk about what makes what helps the team succeed. How can you create a team environment where the team is effective and engaged, particularly when you're dealing with a dispersed workforce, which is so common today?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think part of it sounds so common sense, David, but honestly, I don't see it in practice all the time, and that is respecting each person on the team as someone of great value and worth, as a human being and as a contributor. And then being willing to recognize that and acknowledge that along the way. You know, some leaders think, well, I don't need to give this person feedback. You know, that's what we pay them for. But I think to build a strong team, the people on the team have to be recognized for the contributions they make and receive that verbal, you know, feedback along the way. But it's a combination of both positive feedback that's earned, not just flattery, not just, you know, saying, oh, you're great. It's being very specific. I really like, you know, the way that you handled that situation with the client, because now they feel even better about our company because of the way you spoke with them and your thoroughness in providing them the answer that they needed. So you give people specific feedback that helps them understand the behavior that you appreciate and that you, of course, want to see again in the future. But also help being committed to their development. And that means, you know, pointing out things that they didn't do correctly, but offering guidance and suggestions on what they could do in the future to be more successful. So they don't feel like they've been criticized or put down. They sense the commitment to helping them be even more effective. And I think that that goes a long way to building, you know, the term that's now called engagement. But really, what we're talking about is a commitment to the organization, a commitment to do their best, you know, to put forth the effort, to strive for excellence. And of course, another key factor of building a strong team is modeling the behaviors that you're looking for in the people on your team. Because people are going to look at what you do, not just what you say.
And Meredith, I know that you specialize in particular in leadership development and talent management. What do you see as some examples of companies that are really doing this well, particularly given the business challenges that are commonly faced today?
Well, one of the things that I see is a commitment to developing both sides of a leader, the technical aspects of, you know, the work that needs to be done, but also the people side. So they develop what I like to call a coaching culture, where the leaders, as well as the folks they lead, are feeling good about the work that they're doing because the atmosphere around them is one that is supportive, and it's one where when they make mistakes, as we all are going to do, there is not somebody, you know, holding a stick over their head trying to beat them up, but instead coaching them about the situation and helping them see what they can do to be more effective. And I think that, you know, there's this whole dynamic that goes on when people interact with each other and they feel safe. And they feel that, you know, if I do my best, even if I make mistakes, I can learn from it. And so to me, one of the roles of a leader is to help a person process situations that happened, whether they were successes or mistakes, to learn from them so that going forward, they can be even more effective. So a good leader is asking questions, is helping the person think for himself or herself, and not telling or dictating or giving advice, but really mastering that important skill of listening combined with asking good questions.
So what happens if you are, as a leader, you are working with your employees in the way you described, where you're coaching and you're helping the employees learn from their experiences, but the employee doesn't seem to be catching on or doesn't seem to be doing better in the same situation when it happens a second time or a third time?
Well, I think that's where we, you know, move into this area of giving feedback and performance coaching, where you've got multiple situations where something has happened. And so I think you can still combine asking questions, you know, to draw out from that person, why do you think this is continuing to happen even after we've had, you know, multiple discussions around this? What's preventing you from following through with the things that we agreed upon, assuming that in your earlier conversations they did commit to changing behavior and, you know, doing certain things? So again, you're still drawing out from them what seems to be the obstacle that's preventing them from complying with what they said they would do. And it, you know, I think it's very appropriate, depending on what their attitude is, you know, there's a combination of things that the leader has to be tuned into and sense about the person. Are they sincere? Are they really trying? Are there things within the organization that are still getting in the way, or are they simply not, you know, committed strongly enough? And it can be appropriate at that point, depending on, you know, the data you gather from them and from your own assessment of the situation, to map out, you know, this, be very clear about what they need to do and what the consequences are going to be if they don't do it. Not in a threatening way, but a leader has a responsibility to the organization as a whole, not just to this one individual. So all the needs need to be taken into consideration. And it doesn't mean you dance around. I think you need to be very clear. And it's a service to both you and that other person, because then you know if you've been very clear about your expectations and what the consequences will be if they don't follow through, then if they end up not following through, you've got a decision to make. And you need to be consistent and following through, because other people are watching. You know, years ago I heard this statement, you know, the bar is set by the lowest performing employee. So if that
Which is so true.
It is. And everybody is watching this. And many times leaders are oblivious to the fact that that's happening. And so if you don't follow through with, you know, it could be firing that person or, you know, some other extreme measure, it's a relief to the other people on the team when the leader takes a stand and shows strength, because it helps all of them understand what the boundaries are and what the expectations are about performance in that organization or on that team.
All right, it's like if I've seen the situation where if a supervisor has, let's say, half a dozen employees, and one employee starts coming in late, and first it's 5 minutes late, and the supervisor doesn't call the employee on it, then all of a sudden it's 10 minutes late, and then pretty soon the rest of the members of the team are doing the same thing, and then all of a sudden you have a real problem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great example. And you know, David, for the listeners that are also parents, the same principle applies.
Oh, it sure does.
Because, and it's not to compare adults to children and say they're the same, but all of us like to know what's the structure. You know, we don't do well in chaos. And so what is it that, or at least not for the long term, we can, you know, handle chaos on a short term basis, but we like to have some kind of structure. You know, what are the rules? What are the guidelines? What consistently should we be doing here? And it goes back to what are the core values, you know, and if excellence is a value, if effort is a value, then how does that manifest itself in the behaviors in the workplace? And I think always tying back in a conversation with an employee, you know, what the expectations are, and what's expected and why, that gives that employee the opportunity to decide, is this where I want to work because this is the expectation? Am I willing to do what's required to meet this?
That's great. Meredith, are there particular tools that you see work well in developing and managing talent in a way that creates an engaged and effective workforce?
Well, I think that, there's always the assessment piece. We happen to have a 360-degree feedback tool. That's one way of finding out what a person's strengths are, what they need to work on, as perceived by those who are impacted by their performance. So that's a tool that can be very beneficial. But of course, by itself, it doesn't do anything. Just because a person gets feedback and they see what it is people want them to continue doing and what they want them to change, that in itself doesn't go anywhere. You need the follow-up discussions, reinforcement. And I think that's a key piece. There need to be components in place where a person is coached on a regular basis by their manager or by some individual that really cares about their performance, that regular communication. So it's not a requirement that there be a tool, but there could be as far as a structure, but it's more certain behaviors that happen that are conducive to creating the kind of environment where people want to give their best effort.
That's good to know. Meredith, what are you working on now? What's new and exciting in your company?
Well, we've our latest product is an online coaching system that is used for the development of managers and employees, because it's so hard now for companies to bring people together for formal training classes. You know, we have dispersed workforces, but we also have the cost of, you know, bringing people together. So I'm excited about what I see happening with people who are using this system, either as a follow-up to assessments they've gotten or a training class that they've attended. You know, David, billions of dollars are wasted in this company every year on training programs that never translate into improved performance. And a lot of it is because of the what I call the hope, H-O-P-E, hope factor. You know, people are sent to a training class, and then when they go back to their work, the hope is that they'll apply what they learned. But the reality of how the brain works is that we need the opportunity to practice a new skill before and get reinforcement and, you know, have follow-up around it before it becomes a real habit for us. And an example of that is if you went to a pro for golf lessons or tennis lessons, if you just went through that, you know, lesson with them and then you left and you never practiced on your own, you really couldn't expect your game to improve. The skill that they worked with you on wouldn't make really much difference because you already have this other way of doing it. And that's what happens back on the job. Somebody can go to a leadership class, but back on the job, the old way of doing it kicks in automatically because the brain is actually physically wired for that habit. So what I'm really excited about is our program that can help people form a new habit over time because of two things. One is the process that we've built into the program, and the other is the fact that we have a coaching element built in. So they have at least one person serving as their accountability coach that keeps them on track. Because, you know, it's sort of like losing weight or working out at the gym. It makes a big difference when you have someone that's checking on you to see if you're doing what you said you would do.
And supporting you.
Yes, and supporting you. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. It's really important to feel that you're not out there by yourself. And of course, many leaders feel somewhat isolated because they may not have that interaction, you know, with their peers every day or a coach or someone to really support them. So this is a way for them to get support actually from an accountability coach and set up a network of support coaches that they can interact with at their convenience through this program, so they can get input, feedback, you know, suggestions, ideas. If they're dealing with a tough situation, they can, you know, write about it, and a message can go out to any of the coaches they choose, and they can get ideas that really help them handle the next situation or even this particular situation more effectively, because it's sort of like a mastermind. You know, you're not just drawing on your own knowledge and experience, you're getting input from others who also have experience that could be valuable to you in this particular situation.
Meredith, you've been an entrepreneur and an expert on leadership development and talent management for a long time. We spoke earlier about your own desire for learning and being good at what you do. Who's been really pivotal for you in your own personal development as an entrepreneur and a professional in the area that you specialize in?
You know, I've had so many people that I've studied over the years. In recent times, one of the people that's had a profound influence on my thinking and the actions that I take is a fellow named Steve Chandler. And Steve is the author of several books. Some of the ones that he's written, I've read seven of them. I don't think I've ever read any other, that many books from any other author. But what he does is, The whole philosophy is one of giving rather than getting, of serving others. How can I serve this person who's in front of me as powerfully as possible at this moment? So that what that's done, David, is then when I have a conversation with someone, whether it's a prospective client or, you know, one of my business partners or even my husband or a friend, it's thinking about, you know, asking questions and finding out what is something I could say or suggest that might be of value to them at this moment. Now, obviously, you know, in an everyday casual conversation, that doesn't necessarily apply. But what it does is profound in terms of the impact just on me, because I'm relaxed, I'm calm. You know, in a potential sales situation, I'm not thinking about, oh, when am I going to have the opportunity to introduce my product or anything like that. In focusing on learning more about that person and who they are and what they're looking for in life or in their business, the conversation evolves naturally. And I think you sensed it, you know, when you and I spoke. There was, you know, I wasn't focused on trying to sell you anything. It was really us getting to know more about each other. And I think that having that approach and that attitude is huge in terms of having joy in your life and in your work.
I've read one of Steve Chandler's books also. And I would say that the application comes up in life more than one might think, not just in business.
And I'll tell you the other profound impact that he has had on me and another coach that I've had a chance to speak with that I think might be very interesting for your audience to consider is this idea of being so serious. I think by nature, I tend to be a more serious person. And one of the things that Steve wrote about in his book, Wealth Warrior, is about the importance of playfulness and fun in when it comes to money. And he had this phrase that he used that I actually blogged about this week because it had such a profound impact. You know how when you're reading a book, sometimes there's a certain sentence that just pops out at you?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the one that popped out of me in this one chapter was this: a serious person is a wealth repellent. Now, you know,
interesting,
isn't it? Because I, you know, anyone in business is thinking, well, my gosh, we've got to take this seriously. You can't mess around. But what he is advocating, and of course, that's taking a sentence out of context. But the point he's making is the more that you can you know, enjoy what you're doing, have fun with it. And the less intense and serious you take it, the more relaxed you'll be, the more relaxed other people will be around you, and really the better results that you'll get. So I would highly recommend that book. He tells some great stories that I know we don't have time for today, but they're memorable in terms of him setting, well, let me just tell you real quick, one of them, because this is really, I think, applicable again for your listeners. He had a client that had a long-standing issue with certain things not getting done from their warehouse. And so Steve said, you know what? You've been struggling with this for years. Let's take your people and divide them into two groups. So he put one group in this one conference room and took a very serious approach and said, okay, I want you to really talk about this issue and think about what could be done to solve it. In the other group, he took a brainstorming approach. Most of them had never done brainstorming before. He said, okay, I want you to have fun. I want you to come up with as many, you know, wild and crazy ideas as you can around this this topic. And what was funny is the rooms were across the hall from each other. And so Steve and the owner were standing in the hall listening to both groups. And in one of them, of course, was very somber. The other group, they were laughing and cutting up. And the business owner is scowling about the laughing because he was one of these very serious people. But it turns out the serious folks didn't come up with anything new than what they had discussed in the past. The brainstorming group came up with, they had to present their three best ideas, and one of them ended up being a solution to the problem that they had never considered before and in fact thought would be rejected by the folks in the warehouse, but in fact they embraced it, they loved it. So his point, of course, is you really can come up with some breakthrough ideas when you take a more lighthearted approach, a more playful approach about it. So I found that just to be profound in all aspects of life, especially around money, because we have been raised so often to take it as such a serious thing. And when we do that, we start worrying and having all these negative emotions and feelings associated with that. And that shuts down creativity.
Which also means the likelihood of taking a risk that's going to be a game changer is less likely.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Meredith, who do you know personally who is doing really remarkable work?
Well, I have to say it's my business partner, Denny Coates, because he's the one I learned so much about the brain and how it learns and the habits we form. And right now, he's focused on writing a book for parents to help them understand how they can communicate more effectively with their children, especially their preteens and teens, in order to help them develop that prefrontal cortex, that front part of the brain. Because, David, most people don't realize that during adolescence, between the ages of 12 and 24, that part of the brain is prime for development. That's where we do our critical thinking, our problem solving, making good judgments. And if that is not consciously developed during those years, we end up with a very small platform for our future thinking. And so Denny's really passionate about this, and I am too, because I see the potential for having a huge impact on the way parents parent their kids, interact with their kids, and the development of the brains of these adolescents during these years. So I just think he's on to something really important.
Wow, that's really great. That sounds exciting. So Meredith, we've had a great discussion about leadership development, about managing teams, about how you do better in business and smash the plateau in today's world, which is filled with challenges. So it's been great having you on. I wanted to thank you for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. Before we close, can you tell listeners how they can learn more about you?
Sure. I'm really most active on Twitter and LinkedIn, and my name on both of those is Meredith, M as in Mary, Bell, B-E-L-L. And I also have a blog, Your Voice of Encouragement, And our product site for our online coaching platform is prostarcoach.com.
That's great. My guest today has been Meredith Bell, president and co-founder of Performance Support Systems. Thank you again, Meredith, for joining us.
My pleasure, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.